No, let's do something to talk and make ourselves better. How about that?
I know you as somebody that will drop everything that you're doing to help somebody in need.
The people we come in contact with, we have to help each other out. My biggest thing is I want people to feed off me.
You did what? What was the bet?
And Brian LaHare bet me $100 that I want to get there in, I think it was like 18 seconds, and or it was like 18 something, and I got it in like 1750 something.
Get wheels. Ryan McMahon right here. He is a rare breed. Luke, Yoda, or Chewie? He's going off here. He's gone. He is gone.
My acting portion for the show is complete. Boil up your own hot dogs, okay? Cut them up and just throw them on in there. Look, you're going into a culinary section.
We have communicated not with hi, hello, how are you? Sometimes it's words from a song, and then we just walk away from each other. Like the day I heard, Daddy never gave affection.
Oh, it's Pearl Jam. A health issue that needs to be addressed. You know, we sometimes turn a blind eye to that. To stay the course, to be happy every day of your life. We have a precious gift every single waking minute we're here. Grab it and go with it.
Igniting, inspiring, and evoking the fire within. You're listening to the What's Your Inspiration podcast with Fox Beyer.
Hello and welcome to episode number 5 of the What's Your Inspiration podcast. Today I've got a good friend on. He's the founder of Marketing Press. He's an author, a public speaker, a music and sports junkie, and mostly my great friend, Greg Taylor. Greg, how are you today?
Good, Fox. Thanks for having me on. Excited to do the show.
I am too, and about a year and a half back or so, I was a guest on your podcast, yep. More Than a Career podcast, so yep. Simply returning the favor, among other things. So, let's get rolling. As founder of Marketing Press, how did it start, and what has it developed into today?
Man, wow. We're going to start there. Okay, so...
Yes, we are going to start there. Whammy, right hook to begin.
Yeah, so Marketing Press is a... Marketing Press, in its essence, is a marketing firm, and we specialize in the WordPress platform. And it simply started because 7 years ago, I got fired from 3 ad agencies in about 18 months, and with my back against the wall, and just being real frustrated with my career and personally where I was at the time, you know, I needed to do something differently, and I wanted to affect change in the quickest manner for clients. So, you know, with back against the wall, how could I also affect change for myself at that time, right?
Right.
I left this part out. I had $400 to my name and a laptop, right? Right. So what I did was I founded a company with a partner that was short-lived at that time because me and a partner didn't get along. But Marketing Press was the pivot that I made 7 years ago, which turned out into a WordPress-centric marketing firm where what we do is we affect change for small businesses, nonprofits, startups in the quickest manner, in the most cost-effective way using the WordPress platform.
Gotcha. I mean, you can't be more succinct than that.
The short story is it started because I had no choice. I was unemployable. I mean, working in Phoenix, I was a... Phoenix is a relatively small market.
Right.
So being fired 3 times in 18 months in a small market, nobody was going to hire me for what I did. My other option, which wasn't really an option, was to change careers totally and reinvent myself. And I didn't want to do that because I felt like I was on to something that I was really passionate and stoked about. So I went ahead and Marketing Press, now it's 7.5 years old, will be 8. June 1st, God willing,
we'll
make it.
Yes.
And that's how it all started. And that's how my career kind of took a huge step forward by making a whole bunch of steps backwards.
Right. And you said before you were unemployable. I wouldn't say you were unemployable. Just at that point, you were unemployed. And I can recall.
No, I was totally unemployable. I was unemployable. I'm still highly unemployable. Nobody wants to hire me unless they're a brand or a company who wants to do things our way. You know, I was always, even living in New Jersey and moving west, I always felt like I was the square peg in a round hole trying to fit in with everybody else. Corporate life, not for me.
Okay,
working for somebody else other than my client is a real hard thing for me, only because while I'm not really having strong ideas and a strong personality, it just, I have in my mind and I click with certain people on how to get things done and affect change. I keep saying that, affect change in the quickest possible manner for a lot of these people. So I was, I mean, nobody was going to hire me, I mean, at all.
Well, I'll say this, you know, it's going to be 8 years old this June. I think things have changed. You're definitely employable at this point. And the people listening right now, this podcast is partly due to Greg. And everything good about this podcast probably has to do with him. Everything you don't like about it, that's probably my fault.
Well, I'll take some of that. You can't take credit without taking blame also. So if people don't like it, I'm partially blamed also. But
okay.
I think that, you know, this podcast is more of you wanting to do things and you wanting to make things happen for yourself. I mean, maybe some conversations that we had, whether it's car rides or family dinners or bar talk or wedding talk, you know, I mean, things like that. Like, maybe planted the seed, but you're responsible for taking action. Ideas are, you know, Gary Vee, and I like Gary Vaynerchuk, like him or hate his personality, I like him because he always says, ideas are shit and worthless. Execution is everything. So while I may have given you the idea or helped plan the idea, you did all the execution. So
yeah, I was smart enough to listen to you, listen to your words, and put them into to just thinking about this. You do a lot of different things. You're not just the founder of Marketing Press, and I mentioned before, you're an author, a public speaker, a podcast host, a music and sports junkie.
Yep.
And going into you being an author, you recently published a book called The Complete WordPress Guide.
Making sure your content is dialed in. And your content can't be dialed in until you know what, until you know your brand or your voice. Your voice can't be dialed in until you know where you want to go and what you want to do and what your goals are.
Right.
The biggest thing that I always say when it comes to, you know, my work is, you know, you have to measure everything. You have to measure, you know, everything has to be, you have to be able to measure everything because you don't know what's working and what's not unless you can measure it. So measuring things and making sure your metrics are realistic, your expectations are realistic, and making sure that, you know, those things are dialed in is super important. The other thing is just making sure that you know your goal. You know, I always say, you know, for a website, there's only three goals you can ever achieve. It's, do you want content to position yourself as a subject matter expert and for search engines to see you that way also? Do you want to create a community around your product, service, or brand? Or do you want conversion? And conversion meaning having somebody act in a specific manner you want them to. You know, a conversion for one of my sites is getting a click and getting contact information. Some people conversion is a sale. So it's knowing what you want to do, knowing who you are, and knowing who you're talking to, the biggest things you have to get right from the jump.
Gotcha. Before you put anything down, have that.
Yeah.
Plan ahead.
Yeah. Anybody can make a website look great. Like, good brands and successful companies make websites and their marketing plan work.
Amen.
Yeah, right?
Four letters, yeah. Amen. Yeah, and I'm learning about that now. I mean, Greg designed my website for me, foxbuyer.com. The structure is him. 100%, and I'm just, every day, he's given me the keys, and every day I'm trying to put content on there that is valuable for people. Question. We, this summer, took a walk in Joshua Tree Park.
Oh, yeah.
And you're talking to me about two different points of view of life. Work-life balance and work-life blend.
Mm.
Which one are you more proponent of, and why do you have this point of view?
So, being what I, you know, being who I am professionally and also personally, being a good boyfriend and a good family member and a good friend, you know, I don't believe in work-life balance. I just don't believe it. I've tried to achieve it. Other people have tried to achieve it around, and it just ends up somebody gets the short end of a stick. You know, like look at a teeter-totter or a seesaw, whatever, you know, how you refer to it. It's never flat. One end is always up and one end is always down, right? So I don't believe that you can ever truly achieve work-life balance. I do believe in a work-life blend because, And one of the key things also work like blend is having the right people in your life and around you, you know, because without that, there's no blend, right? You know, I believe in a work-life blend. And to me, a work-life blend is, for example, real-life example. Today, you know, Julie and I, Julie, who's my girlfriend, your sister.
Yes. yes.
Went out, you know, went to the gym, went to breakfast. At 11:30, I excused myself from breakfast. You know, the bill was paid. I went into the car and waited for a couple seconds because I had an important business call. Business call that I could have easily restructured. You know, I'm trying to take some time off around the holidays and the end of the year now. But it's, but that's the blend. Having the right partner, like Julie was saying, I'm like, okay, she totally understood that, hey, at 11:30, I got to take this business call and it's going to interrupt our personal life for 25 minutes. But unless you have the right people around you, you can't achieve the blend. I mean, I can't stress that enough. The blend is doing, you know, just doing a lot of what you want to do, doing a lot of what you have to do, and sometimes doing what you have to do until you're able to do what you want to do. So right. I strive to have a blend.
Yeah, it goes back to your view with marketing press, having that structure first and letting everybody know this is how it's going to be.
Yep.
If you're in, you're all in. If you're not, let me know.
You know, and I never really thought of it this way until, you know, in discussing it now. I'm huge on collaboration. I don't believe in competition. I mean, competition, of course, you know, businesses are going to compete.
Yes.
You know, I do believe in a great client of mine, Jay Baer from Convince and Convert, who I have the utmost respect for, had told me early on, a rising tide lifts all ships. So if my competition is doing well, in some way, shape, or form, my firm is benefiting from that. Maybe it's the positioning. You know, maybe a competitor landed a huge client, real life example again, CNN, huge client, right? Well, what does that do to my firm? It positions me in another level too. Right?
Right.
So the rising tide lifts all ships. And being a collaborative person, you know, I believe in collaboration over competition. You have to collaborate in life with other people or else you can't achieve anything. So part of the work-life balance for me is collaborating with the people around me and making sure that we're all on the same page moving towards the same goal.
Mm. Right. And going back to what's the line again? A rising tide lifts all ships. Okay. I was going to use the old Lou Holtz line. Don't tell me how rocky the sea is. Just bring the darn ship in.
Yeah. Well, think of it in a baseball. Hitting is contagious.
Yes.
Right? Yes. The guy in front of me is getting all these hits. Mm-hmm. You know, it's elevating me because maybe I'm seeing different pitches or I'm doing something.
Right.
I'm able to learn from him and do something. So it's like, it's beneficial to everybody.
Yes. Yeah, I love that. A rising tide lifts all ships. From your friend Jay Baer.
Jay Baer, yes.
Yes. All right. Nice. So as Greg blends, you can see him out. He is out any night of the week. He does work 24/7, but he's out any night of the week listening to some great music or at a sporting event.
Yep.
So let's go in to sports a little bit right now. You have played hockey on the rinks of New Jersey.
Yes.
You have torn your knee up playing basketball.
Yeah.
Okay, you've played Little League baseball, Greenbrook Little League. Yeah. Okay,
countless skateboard concussions.
Countless. We can't forget about skateboarding. I mean, that's one thing. If you didn't bring it up, yeah. I mean, countless skateboard concussions. Which of all the sports you've played, be it hockey, baseball, basketball, skateboarding, and I'm missing others. Which is your favorite to play?
Man, that's a great question, and I've never really been asked that.
Well, I want to know.
Yeah, you know, I think that there's something amazing about playing baseball and playing softball, and there's just something about it where I think there's something about it when you can get nine other individuals on the same page for one goal. I never thought of baseball as a team sport. Baseball is an individual sport within a team concept.
Yes.
Right? Nobody's going to help me catch or throw or anything like that. But I always loved it because of the reverence I have for the game and for the history and for the people who played
before me.
And, you know, watching my father play softball as a kid and, like, all of that. I mean, that's probably one of my favorites to do. personally, individually, I mean, although I did play a lot of golf, and that's an individual thing, skateboarding has given me relationships that I could never forge anywhere else, you know? Mm-hmm. And growing up in the 80s and still skateboarding to the day, there's something about a skateboard that when you're rolling down a street on a skateboard and see somebody with a skateboard, you guys will have an instant connection, an instant bond.
Yes.
That's like no other sport or anything else. You know, mm-hmm. I can show up in a bar with a guitar and people are going to be like, bah, 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 look at this guy. He thinks he can play. Where a skateboard is just like, it doesn't matter how good you are. And I've skated with the best in the world, right? Mm-hmm. Through different career things. I've skated with guys that have video games named after them, that win X Games medals, just because of the time that I grew up in things, and they never looked down on anybody.
Right.
You know, it was just right. something about the camaraderie of that, which is a lot like the camaraderie of baseball, if you think about it.
Right.
Like, you know, when you're on a diamond together, you know, you're always trying to help one another, pick each other up, you know, and it's just, you know, so I think it would be those two things would be my favorite. Although I love hockey until I fell out of love with the game, you know, physically couldn't do it anymore. Things were going on in the NHL I didn't agree with, you
right.
know, with the commissioner and things like that. And I sort of fell out of love with the game
okay.
at that point.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I can't relate to the skateboarding part of it, although you have gotten me into a little bit of a history. I mean, I didn't know anything about Gator,
sure.
Mark Rogowski,
yeah.
until watched the documentary Stoked.
Yep.
Outstanding, recommended.
Yeah.
It's on YouTube, and I've gotten into history a little bit, and I can see. I mean,
one of my weirdest moments, sorry to interrupt, one of my weirdest moments is I went to the world premiere of that documentary.
This is a good story.
In San Diego.
This is a really good story.
And I was working in the industry at the time. I owned a company within the skateboard industry, and I got to work and know and meet heroes of mine, you know, and they were all cool guys. And it was like, but I went to the Helen Stickler, the director's world premiere. It was after a trade show. It was in San Diego, close to the neighborhood that I live in now in San Diego. And it was crazy watching this documentary with the people who were in it.
Yes.
And I'm sitting next to, I'm sitting in a chair with my friend Colby Carter and my other friend Brad Sedlecki, and three seats down is Jason Jesse, who is on screen. We're just, it was blown away. It was one of those moments that, you know, that was absolutely priceless. And it was just simply amazing.
Almost felt like unreal to you, right?
Totally. I'm like, I'm this kid from New Jersey. You know, I'm this kid from New Jersey.
You idolize all these people, right?
I idolize these guys sitting next to me, trying to not be like a, I don't know, trying not to be starstruck, you know, or anything like that. But inside, you're a little like, oh my God, Jason Jesse next to me. The guy does the best frontside ollies ever.
Yeah.
You know, and he's on screen talking about how his friend affected his life with this criminal act that he did. So it was one of the most bizarre moments ever.
Yeah, I mean, and just thinking about how people idolize other people. Mm. Jason Jesse would sip a straw like Rogowski
yeah.
would sip a straw.
Yeah. Yeah, he would hide his face a little. Yeah,
hide his face.
Jason Jesse's a... He's a character.
He looks like
a character.
But seeing him on there, I think you feel like he is a character.
Yeah, totally.
Sure.
But I mean, I got to do that. And like but that was something that skateboarding gave me.
Right.
Like the relationships and the experiences that I have had are only because my Aunt Helen, when I was 11, bought me a skateboard, Sims Jeff Phillips board, in some skate shop on Springfield Avenue in Berkeley Heights.
Sure.
Which is like, what, 5 miles from here at the most?
Right.
You know what I mean? And speaking of that board, I saw somebody in a bar the other night, Chris Gentry, who is a pro skateboarder, and he said that was his first board too. We had a conversation about it. So here's Chris Gentry, who was a super pro. I'm this guy who just likes skateboarding, worked mm-hmm. in the industry. And 2 weeks ago, we talked about how we had the same first board. Like, wow. I mean, it's like the connection there is
yeah.
like no
it's a bond for life.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a bond for life because yeah. you get on a skateboard, you have numerous skateboard concussions.
Yeah. So it's
that's
amazing I can remember anything.
That's true. You've paid it back. I mean, you've helped build skate parks in New York and in San Diego. Talk about that for a little bit.
Yeah, so I was at an agency in Tempe, Arizona, and I met a fella who, this is right before skate parks got big, public skate parks got big, right? Mm. This is probably 2001. And we became friends because of skateboarding. We knew common people. Although he grew up in San Jose, and I grew up here in New Jersey, mm-hmm. you know, we knew all these common people from skateboarding, mm-hmm. right? So we had talked and we hit it off, and he asked me to come on. He was starting this new company. He was going to design and build skate parks around the world. Like, I didn't even know there was a job. And then I started talking to him. Well, he wasn't just a skateboard. He's a registered landscape architect.
Okay.
So when you see skateboards around your cities and stuff, registered landscape architects are the ones who build those and design those, mm-hmm. pretty much. Bonus points, if you're a skateboarder that is a landscape architect, like my friend Brad Selecki, Pillar Design Studios.
Right.
Mike McIntyre, formerly of Site Design Group. So he asked me to come on his company as marketing director. And it was my job to go to towns, to their public meetings, when they were saying yes or no to skate parks. And I did numerous. So I did them in San Diego and Springfield, Illinois, Honolulu. I mean, everywhere.
Tons of other places.
Joplin, Missouri, Tallahassee, you know. All these places. And what I had to do is talk to people about why skate parks are important to communities and what they're going to do and et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I was able to. I worked in the skate park industry for quite a while, and it was a dream come true, you know, talking to, getting, you know, being consulted by Lance Mountain, Tony Hawk, like all these guys, like the biggest of the big skateboarders, mm-hmm. saying, oh, yeah, that would be a cool spot. That would be a great place for a skate park. So, yeah, it was interesting. And living down in San Diego, I drive by the Ocean Beach Park.
I've seen it. Yeah. Yes. And you see the look on your face as you go by every time.
Yeah, that was one of the first ones that I was involved in. Or I was involved in, you know, one in Coronado, you know, California, mm-hmm. and a bunch of other ones. So it was really good. You know, I always thank Mike McIntyre for the opportunity, you know, for getting involved in that. Mm-hmm. So
it's amazing. I mean, it's amazing what you've been able to do. I did not realize you help build others and started the process in other places, too. It's probably close to 10 places.
Yeah, probably. I mean, yeah, I was probably involved in about 25 public parks, a bunch of private ones, mm-hmm. you know, through that firm. And yeah, it was fun. It was a dream job until it became a nightmare.
That's a line.
It is. It was a dream job because it became a nightmare because, you know, I talked to a lot of professional golfers. And when I say professional golfers, there are so many professional golfers out there that nobody knows of because they're the local club pro.
Yes.
Or they're the town pro, you know, the town pro. Like mm-hmm. Ken McDonald in Tempe, Ken McDonald Golf Course in Tempe, Arizona has a pro for that city course.
Right.
There's tons of those guys out there. Well, not PGA guys that you see on TV, professional golfers. And they say the best job, the worst job in the world, if you love golf, is being a golf pro.
Because you get diluted?
Is it? Well, because all you do is talk about it and you can't play.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what I'm talking about. Yeah,
and it's like, it was a great, being in the skateboard industry was the greatest thing unless you had your love for skateboarding like I did.
And then you wanted to skate.
Yeah, I wanted to skateboard. I wanted to just roll around with my friends. And what happened, I would go to a park and somebody would say, oh, you're from this company. Why is this like this? Or people would hate on you. Like, there were people who just simply disliked you for where you worked. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's fine. But the time that I actually got to skateboard was down to, like, nothing because I was working on skate parks for other cities.
Wow. And you really spoke to why, what skating does to bring communities together.
Oh, yeah,
I think
yeah.
that's a great story. And this is an example of how this podcast can go in any kind of direction. You mentioned your Aunt Helen how she inspired you to get into skateboarding.
Yep.
I want to talk about sports, about music rather. From whom did you acquire initially your appreciation for music?
You know, I think it would have to be, you know, definitely my parents. Mm-hmm. You know, when my parents were married, I remember, you know, my father playing guitar. And I picked up the guitar for, you know, I wanted to learn how to play guitar because it was something that me and my father could do without arguing, without him yelling at me.
You
know
yes.
what I mean? And, like, that's the truth. You know what I mean? We didn't have a great relationship. To the day he died, we didn't have a great relationship. So I got my love and appreciation for music. And I remember hearing the songs that I play sometimes the first time, you know, in our living room, him playing them. The other side of that, you know, I definitely got my love and appreciation for music from my mother, who we would be in the 70s.
Riding down to the beach.
Riding down to the shore, wherever we would go. I'd sit in what they called the way back at that time in the station wagon, facing the wrong way down the park, and she would play her music. Mm-hmm. And that's why I got my love for guys like, you know, Billy Joel, The Temptations. You know, I can even recite some Barry Manilow lyrics because I remember
Barry Manilow.
Right?
I love it.
I think that, you know, Julie and I, we were... Copacabana came on a couple weeks ago or something like that, and I knew some of the words. But, like, all of that stuff. And my Aunt Robin, too, you know, and my Uncle Duke, like, we were just a musical family. We just always grew up with music in the house. Mm-hmm. We didn't always have TV on until, like, later in life, you know. But we always had music. Our house is always full of music. Me and my grandmother, even. My grandmother, like, cooking Sunday suppers. With Frank Sinatra or Elvis playing on the radio on a little transistor, you know, music was always in our home. So, like, I just got it from that.
Right. You know? And Julie and I know our grandmother to this day. I mean, she's got the radio on full blast. You can hear eight blocks down. That's just how it was with our grandparents.
Yes.
You for the longest time, and you still are to this day, big fan of the Grateful Dead.
Yeah.
Huge fan. I mean, started in 1987, right, was your first concert?
July 12th, 1987.
At the Garden, correct?
No, it was at a Giant Stadium. It was July 12th, 1987. I was 16 years old, and it was the Dead and Dylan playing there.
All right.
Yeah, I remember, it was hot. I remember how hot it was. It was crazy hot. One of those hot New Jersey, muggy July days.
Yeah, you're walking through soup.
Ugh.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's where that all, as they say in the Grateful Dead world, that's when I got on the bus.
You got on the bus, and you haven't gotten off since. I mean, you've seen them everywhere. We're riding somewhere after dinner last night, and a song comes on to Sacramento, 1990. And you go, yeah, I was there.
Yeah.
Describe that experience a little bit.
The experience of hearing it or the experience of being there?
Being there in Sacramento in 1990, listening to that.
You know, like, so Sacramento 1990, right? It was like one of my first cross-country trips. It was like second time I was in California. And I thought, like a lot of you guys do, you guys being everyone else who's not from California, California is all beaches and nice. Well, welcome to Sacramento. Sacramento's like in the middle. It's a capital state, but it's in the middle of the state. And it's like, there's no beach. It's hot. The coolest thing around Sacramento is about 45 minutes away is Napa Valley. Mm. But going to Sacramento and being there with my friends, you know, two other guys that we drove across the country. And I left, you know, with like hardly any money, but just this will of like, fuck it, I'm going to make this work. You know, I left with $100 to be gone all summer, like $100, like. In 1990, but then being there with everybody, pulling in and seeing the band there, and you know, we camped in the parking lot, because you were allowed to at that time. Mm-hmm. It was just amazing. I mean, just being in California, Northern California, mm-hmm. seeing the Dead Northern California, it was like super cool, because that's where they're from.
Where they're from, yeah.
Whole different types of fans there, and it was just, you know, it was an experience. I was 19, and it was just like, holy cow. This is the greatest thing ever. I don't want this to stop. And like, I didn't, you know, Grateful Dead known for drugs and a lot of drinking, something like that. You know, we never did any of that stuff. We were, you know,
in there for the show.
We were in there for the music. Yeah. We were in there purely for the music, not the party. Mm-hmm. And it was just amazing. And you know, I also got a huge, you know, love for music from that and the traveling and the sights that I've seen because of music. But yeah, I mean, that was just awesome experience.
Yeah, you put a lot of miles under your feet for sure.
Yeah.
Following Dead and other bands as well, as you blend your life, not balance.
That's right.
Work life blend and not balance.
People think I'm crazy. I'm like, oh,
I don't think you're crazy.
Wilco's playing in Denver. I live in Arizona. Why wouldn't I go?
You take a ride.
Yeah. let's go. Who wants to, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I go. I mean, you know, it's when you travel for music like that, right? And whether it be, you know, us going to Nashville for a weekend, or whether it be me driving to Denver at Red Rocks to see a band, or you following them around or whatever, the musical adventure starts when the car stops.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And it ends when the car is turned off in your home, in your own bed. That's the whole adventure of the whole thing. I don't want to be cliche and say the joy is in the journey, but I mean, that's kind of what, I mean, I can't.
Sure it is.
I don't know what else I could say.
Sure it is.
It was like the whole adventure was what I was looking for, maybe from what I was, you know, lacking as a child or feeling like the square peg in a round hole. I found something that I could connect to with other people.
Right.
You know, who cares if I had to drive 2,600 miles or I had to drive 5 hours or 5 minutes, you know? It was about the connection of everything.
Yeah, that you acquire with people along the way.
Yeah.
Question to you in terms of that. You're going 2,600 miles to...
Sacramento.
Sacramento, okay, to listen to the Dead play, okay, in your car. Do you listen to the Dead, or do you make a conscious effort not to listen to any of their music before the show?
You know, I probably think that we listen to the Dead the whole way.
Okay.
But now,
okay.
Now it's different. Now I wouldn't do that.
Okay. You know?
There's also a time, you know, I didn't listen to the Dead for a good 10 years. I didn't listen to one single thing, one note of theirs for like 10 years. But it was like, you do because you're excited about it. And and also, I mean, I'm 19 years old. I mean, that's pretty much all the music that consumed me. You know, so I wanted to listen to it
right, you know,
all the time now.
Yeah, because some that I've heard and read of make an effort not to listen to their music. And just to make their experience more fresh and new for them. Yeah.
Also, I was one of three in a car.
Okay.
So it was like, you know, I was... One vote, you know, not numbered.
Right, right. It's more of a group vote. You're not driving alone.
Yeah, but I think that now, now if I'm going to a concert or something like that, I'll listen to whatever's on the radio. I know what I'm going to hear in an hour and a half. I'm excited, you know.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I haven't experienced that, but from you, I feel like in a way I have. I've gotten into the Dead a little bit through a couple of documentaries
sure.
and their music as well. So
yep.
Thank you for that.
Wow. Yeah, my pleasure. Please.
Got it. You ready for a game?
Okay, let's do it.
As a music and sports junkie, let's play What, Which, and Where.
Oh,
so,
geez, okay.
Where did these quotes or lyrics come from?
Oh, man. All right, let's see how I do.
I'm guessing you're going to do pretty well. Number 12 over there did pretty well on her podcast. Julie Byer is sitting across from us now. Hi, Julie.
Hi.
How are you? Excellent. So, What, Which, and Where. Who said this? Where did it come from, Greg? He said, I want you all to line up in alphabetic order according to height. As a sports junkie.
I think that it's... I think it was Casey Stengel. Casey Stengel or Yogi Berra.
I'm going to say it one more time. Oh. I want you to line up in alphabetical order according to height.
I think it was Yogi. It had to be Yogi because that sounds like him. Am I wrong already?
Just go to your first choice.
Casey Stengel.
It was indeed Casey Stengel. This guy knows what he's doing.
I didn't know. I don't know much about Casey Stengel other than my grandfather said he was the greatest manager ever. But that sounds like something Yogi would have said, though.
Yes,
right?
Yes. Well, it was one of the two.
When you see a fork in the road, take it.
Yeah, exactly. And then get lost.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, when I was thinking about this, I'm trying to do a Yogi or a Casey quote.
That's a good one.
Being that you're...
You almost got me.
That you're a baseball junkie. Now, next quote. Quote, good job. You ran two bases in one play. Who said that? Good job. You ran two bases in one play.
I don't know. I have no idea.
No idea.
Who's that?
That's my grandmother.
Oh!
Ms. Wanda Kilwalker.
Your grandma said
Yes. So your
grandma said that?
The story is I'm Pony League baseball. I'm on first base, and my brother Billy, hitting behind me, hits a ball from New Jersey to San Diego, and I get to third. And I am so embarrassed that I couldn't score. Approach my grandmother with my head down. She says, "Fox, I am so proud of you. You ran two bases in one play."
That's amazing. I'm gonna have to quiz her about that one. Next time I see
it. Yeah, that would be good.
Okay. I'm 50% right now.
50%. It also came from my book, Letter Kindling. It's in a poem called Extraordinary, But No One There to See. So shameless plug, but that's where it came from. But to be 1-for-2 on that, Greg, is pretty outstanding. Wanted to go back to some storytelling about music.
Okay.
We're both big Prince fans.
Yep.
And you have a Prince story. You're seeing him live in concert.
Yeah.
It's a story about Prince, a guitar, and a ring.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
So it was on the... Oh, Jesus. It was like 1999. I was in Phoenix at the Glendale Arena. And the arena just opened. So like the logistics and everything were just horrible. They actually pushed the show back like 40 minutes because people couldn't get parked. because the logistics were just horrible. And that's where the Coyotes played and or play now or whatever their deal is. Okay. But it was on the Musicology tour, and I saw actually at that time I saw the artist formerly known as Prince.
At that time,
he was
yes.
named as some weird symbol. So he and it was really cool. He was in the round, and it was really awesome to see that. And so Prince is playing, and he's playing Purple Rain, and he's
love
Prince,
that song.
And like Prince during his career and his lifetime was an underrated guitar player. Prince is definitely one of the most fantastic guitar players.
I think he was
phenomenal. And I always said that Prince was my generation's Elvis. He could sing, dance, girls loved him. He could act, he could play guitar. He was a full package, right?
Yes.
You know, I think the only thing Elvis had on him was Elvis was probably like 3 or 4 inches tall. Because Prince is like...
He could have used some height.
Yeah. So Prince is playing a guitar solo, and I believe it was for Purple Rain. And he's struggling to hit a note down towards the 12th, 13th fret. And he doesn't know, like...
I don't know what that is, but go ahead.
The 12th or 13th fret of the guitar... It's, you know, 3/4 away all the way down a neck. And he's struggling to play this note. And he looks down. And he stops for a second. The band keeps playing. Nobody really notices. I'm noticing because I'm watching what Prince is doing for the solo.
Right.
Prince turns his back a little bit. And he was in the round, so the stage is revolving. So we got a good view of it. Prince turns his back a little bit to the front-facing crowd. Pulls off this, like... ring off of his finger that was this huge diamond gold ring. It was like bigger than like a Super Bowl ring.
Yeah.
He turns around and spots a roadie who's on the side. He throws the ring about 15, 20 feet to the roadie. Roadie catches it, puts it in his pocket, and Prince just goes ahead and plays the rest of the solo.
That's an awesome one, man. Ring, guitar, a roadie, and a guitar.
Yeah, I mean, it's like
Prince.
I mean, who else would do that? Other than, first of all, who else would try to play guitar with probably, you know, who knows, with this big ring on, other than Prince,
right?
You know, I mean,
right.
How many people could do that? So
not me, not me. I don't know of anyone, and that's why I wanted to mention that. And you know, Greg, Julie, and I are part of a little group called the One Take Cowboys.
And
because of our appreciation of Prince and homage to him, we're gonna play a little ditty called My Turn to Cry. So. What Greg's going to do is he's going to grab a guitar and we're going to bring this to you live.
Oh, man. And since we're the One Take Cowboys, this is not going to be edited. So
this is unedited.
If we mess it up.
Might go back to the beginning and start it again, but it is totally unedited from this point.
All right. So I'll play this. I'll play the intro twice and then you can come in with your words here. Mm-hmm. So...
Path never traveled. Everything you did was fresh and new. Oh dear, Prince Rogers Nelson, how could you be through? You wrote it and played it. You opened your doors and we felt it. You knew music from the back of your hand, and me from the back of mom's car. Raspberry Beret, man. I looked to you. Way up in the sky, up at you with the doves up so high. Prince, my man, it's our turn to cry. When it comes to music, I don't know shit. But you hit notes no man could hit. I don't care what the neighbors say. Your groove, in my heart, it will stay. I hope you released all your pain and your rage. And it pains me to say, you might be in a better place. I look to you way up in the sky. Up at you and the doves up so high. Prince, my man, it's my turn to cry. About that, the One Take Cowboys get it.
I almost messed up once. but
trust me,
I won't tell you where because you're not going to know.
We're not as non-musicians, or not a non-musician, I will not know where you messed up, Greg.
Don't worry. Our live debut, Joel.
It's a live debut. Rating.
We are.
Unreal, unreal. Question, Greg, where, at what place in San Diego would that little riff work? Where could we go in San Diego right now? An artsy-fartsy place.
Artsy-fartsy place. Well, I'm not much of an artsy-fartsy guy, but...
Neither am I.
There are numerous coffee shops, I'm sure, and there's one in North County where Jason Mraz got his start. We could always go there and hope for the best.
Hope for the best.
There's a bunch of open mics. There's an open mic in Pacific Beach, about 3/4 of a mile from my house, at 710 Live. 710 Live. No, 710 something. 710 Live, I think it's called, right?
Coming soon to 710 something, the one take out.
710 Live. It's on Garnett and the Strand, in the Strandway.
Okay. All
right. On the beach.
On the beach.
So there's a bunch of open mics. I'm sure that we could do that.
We could do that.
Because I heard some girl butchering Adele the other night. I'm sure they'll listen to that.
I don't know how anybody could do well at Adele, but yeah, leave it to me.
Yeah.
Leave it to me. I might butcher it. But you know, Greg, two questions to end it up here. You're now living in San Diego.
Yep.
And do you like all restaurants there?
I do.
But maybe recommendation of two restaurants to go if you're in San Diego.
Okay, let's see. Couple of restaurants I would go to if I was in San Diego. One, I'm a huge lover of tapas and sangria. And I don't think you can have one without the other.
Nay. I would say nay,
Monsoon. So, Costa Brava on Ingraham. Like, Ingraham and Garnett is definitely one of my favorites. It's a Spanish tapas place. Just don't park across the street at the gas station because your car may get towed. And a $150 meal will turn into a $400 meal, $500 meal. And don't ask how I know that. The other one I would definitely say would be the Sandbar, which is right in my neighborhood, 4 blocks from my house. And Sandbar has the best fish tacos. And if you don't know what fish tacos are, you got to go to San Diego and try them out. And as my counterpart would say, they have the best chips in salsa.
Best chips in salsa, because they're warm.
And I would do that, and then after that, I would pop down the street, see my buddy, Cuba, Macho, Danielle, and all the Josh and all the great bartenders at the Coaster.
Amen. Right. Amen. There. And I concur. Been to both places, and I concur wholeheartedly.
And the chips are good. The chips are great at Sandbar.
Chips are outstanding.
The salsa's, you gotta ask if it's hot or not, because they make it all homemade. Mm. So the flavor... The heat runs depending on the cook. I guess whether or not he got in a fight with his wife or who knows. Like, sometimes it's salsa caliente and it's like, I can't do it. But definitely the people, the one thing that has always impressed me with San Diego, and I've been vacationing there for 18 years, ever since I moved to Arizona.
You'd always go.
Always go to San Diego, right? The one thing that really impressed me about Mission Beach, where my home is, and the people there is how welcoming they are. And how simple, laid back, you know, and just how nice they always are. And, you know, I appreciate it to everybody in Mission Beach who welcomed me into their neighborhood. You know, from Marky Mark, the guy who owns the bodega, to, you know, Cuba and Danielle and Jessica and all the local bartenders that I've gotten to know and meet. And, you know, Dave at the local surf shop, you know, trying to teach me about surfing or skateboarding, and who fitted Julie for a great surfboard and wetsuit and all that stuff. It's just amazing how they've welcomed me into the community, and you know how lucky and grateful I am to live there. You know, it's my favorite place in the world, and you know I absolutely love it. So
I agree as well. Been there twice. First time I was there, I had my left right hip was all banged up, and people were. We're very accommodating, to say the least, to let me take my 45 minutes to get down to my chair and sit on the beach, for sure.
Yeah.
Greg, it's been a blast, man. And before you go, and you do this with me on the More Than Career podcast, I want a recommendation. Who should I have on the show? What's a recommendation for somebody I should have on this podcast?
You know, I think that thinking about... You know, who I would recommend, I say it would be one of my best friends and founder of Kitty Hawk Drone Flight Tracking Company, Josh Ziering. Josh Ziering's an amazing storyteller, a great friend, and just I think that he's entertaining as hell. And he, as long as he doesn't tell any Josh and Greg stories about what happened like in the mission when I stayed at his house, you know, that's going to be edited a little bit. Right. No, I'm just kidding. But Josh Ziering of KittyHawk.io would be a phenomenal guest.
I agree. He's got an Instagram account, like Dog of the Day, right?
Me with Dogs. That's his
thing.
Me with
Dogs, yes.
That's his thing. He has this quirky hobby. He wants to meet hot girls by getting his picture taken with their dog. I mean, who does that? Josh does that. So let's get him on your podcast so he can tell the story of how that all started.
Can't wait. Going to have him on as soon as I can. Greg, thanks again.
Anytime.
It's been a pleasure. Can't wait to have you back on.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. And yeah, thanks for everything. It was a blast.
All right, people. That is the end of the fifth What Is Your Inspiration podcast. Greg and I will talk at you all later. Take good care.
You have been listening to the What's Your Inspiration podcast with Fox Buyer. Because impact on each other is the greatest currency you could ever have.
The early was a day-to-day struggle. It went from bad to worse and the pain doubled. Never far from imminent danger, from the tough and unforgiving I was no stranger. Closure to me seemed impossible, but toughness, I had that, and it was plentiful. So I turned my pain into inspiration, and every day I gave it a game-faced salutation. Hello, tough beginnings. You're a pit stop to a happy life, because what's Victory Highway without some struggle and strife?